brown cow.
Here's your intro.
What are you talking about?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hello, everybody. We are back. It's Sunday night. It's First Call. I'm Tom Sosnoff. I'm here with Victor Jones. Mr. Jones, what happening?
Thomas, how you doing, my friend? Tasty Nation, how are you? I was just doing my vocal exercises. I threw Tom off. Ow, now, brown cow. Ow, now, brown cow. Happy Cinco de Mayo, Tom. How are you?
Happy Cinco de Mayo. How am I? I'm not in a good mood today. I think I officially quit golf.
Didn't go well on the links, I see.
No. Mm-hmm. No. It was horrible. So I don't.
No Mickelson moments.
No. I don't deserve to be taking a tee time for somebody else that's worthy. That's all I can say. I mean, you know, I don't know what happened, but something bad happened.
You know what they got going on down here? That LIV golf tournament is going on down here in Singapore right now.
Yeah, LIV's coming to Chicago in a couple of weeks. They're playing.
Oh, is it?
They're playing in a public course out in Bolingbrook, which is kind of. I think it's kind of cool, actually.
I didn't know it was like openly accepted in the United States. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're playing in Chicago, and like I said, they're playing at a public course, which I actually really like because it, you know, because people watch stuff like the Masters and things like that, and they can never play in those courses, so it kind of sucks. But you know, when they play at a regular course that anybody can play for $100. For $80, I love it.
Thomas Sosnoff, a man of the people. That's what I've always said.
That's right. I am. So, but I quit golf anyway, so I don't really care. So that's it.
All right. Well, if you quit golf, let's talk markets then.
So, what are you thinking here? Looks like they're going to open a lot higher tonight. I don't know why. And I think I kind of feel like the rally on Friday. You know, it surprised everybody, myself included. I mean, the rally all towards the end of last week, just the strength of the market and everything else. I mean, you know, I thought we kind of had them. I thought the bears had the bulls on the ropes for a little bit. And the only thing that scared me was as the bonds were selling off and hitting, you know, low 113s, the stock market really wasn't going anywhere. Stock market wasn't selling off. And now I think that, you know, all the major stocks, the earnings are past them. I don't know. And the bonds have rallied back up, you know, at least they're, you know, back towards 116, which puts them, you know, kind of on the dance floor. They're when you look at the bonds here, they have a expected move. I'll tell you right now, they have an expected move over the next, like through July of almost five handles. And they're trading at about 116 right now, which means that if they get an up move, because, you know, there's, you know, it's a 70% chance they tick the upside as well as the downside. So if they get the upside of that move anywhere close to it, then they will, you know, lower rates. And I think that's what the market's rallying on. I really do. Because I think at 113, the bonds basically put the nail in the coffin for, you know, the rates going lower. And I think this rally, I don't think this rally is going anywhere. But, you know, based on what we saw the last couple of days, you know, late buying Friday, straight up.
Yeah, mega caps outperformed, which carries the market. Apple up 8%, Amazon up 3.5%. And the stuff that got whacked doesn't make up a huge part of the market, you know, like crude oil down 7%.
No, nobody cares about that stuff.
That means, yeah, energy is down 3.5%, but it's such a small part of the market. You get Apple rallying 8% and Amazon up 3.5%. Mega caps were really, really strong. But I will say this, Russell edged the NASDAQ last week and that put it in positive territory. Put your rally caps on, baby. Small caps.
Well, small, I mean, caps
went positive for the year.
I mean, small caps are my only long, so I'm okay with that. But, you know, the Russell's still a pig until it's not. So, I mean, I'm just long Russell and I'm staying long Russell and I'm short everything else. So it hasn't really worked because the Russell's, you know, you need so many more Russell contracts to compete with the S&Ps and NASDAQ.
Yeah. But two things I've been dying to ask you about.
Here, they just opened up. The S&Ps opened up.
Oh yeah. They're strong.
14. Yeah. NASDAQ opened up 50. You know, just another power move on the upside. All right, go ahead. What?
Power move. I wanted to ask you, what did you think about Powell's statement and presser last week?
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me what I thought about Anthony Edwards. I don't really care about Pal. I'd much rather talk Ant-Man. Pal, I thought he did, like, he's a very good at what he does. I don't mean he's very good at, you know, setting rates and things like that, because I think the market does all that for him. I think Pal is very good at calming the markets down and just explaining things. Like, I think there's definitely been Fed chairmen that have scared the markets. You know, Greenspan was much more volatile. I think even to a certain extent, Bernanke was fairly volatile. Yellen was volatile, no question about it. But I think that Jay Powell is very, he's just calming to the markets. He does not scare the children.
If there's a potential after this election, we get a new Fed chairman, which means, Tom, there is a non-zero percent probability that you could be appointed as Federal Reserve chairman. What would that look like?
Oh, you see, that would be kind of cool. First of all, the only way that I don't think Jay Powell, I don't think he loses the job no matter what. Because
I think so.
No, I don't think so.
Trump has already said he'd replace him.
I know that's what Trump said, but Trump always says stuff and he doesn't
fall. That's very true.
And I think when push comes to shove, you know, I think there's too much risk for him to change, because you've got the market at record highs. What do you stand to gain by changing? You know, you're going to scare the children.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and who are you going to put in there? You know, one of your cronies, it could tank the market. So I don't think that, at least for the time being, I don't think that's a problem. I don't know if Jay Powell wants to work for him. So I think that would be the issue. So if he wins, I think Powell, if he's smart, steps down and he says, you know what? I don't need your crap.
Michael Cow has called that a very real possibility, that this is Powell's farewell tour preparing for.
Well, think about it. You know, if you're kind of like, if you have a role like that and you want to go out on top, that's your, you know, that's your market at record highs, inflation at lows, interest rates going down. That's your, you know, that's your Super Bowl. Walk out on top.
He did say in last week's presser, one of the most, I don't want to say most interesting things, but one of the things that was most quoted was that it was unlikely that the next policy rate move would be a hike. Larry Summers and others have been squawking that was the potential.
I don't think
to your point in quieting the markets.
I think it's a potential. I think it was a potential a week ago if they had somehow lost the bonds. So I think it was the potential if bonds got down to, you know, in the 112 handle. I think it was a potential, and you know, you had short-term rates. I looked at the. At the basically Fed funds last week, not Fed funds, but the /SR, right? Wasn't that what it is?
SOFR, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's /SR on our platform. And you're talking about 94.65, right? That's the 3 month. And it's 94.65. So you're basically on 3 month paper, you're sitting at highs, because all you do is subtract from 100, 94.65. So you're talking about, you know, 535 on rates on 3 month paper. You know, you're within, you know, you're a stone's throw away from this thing, you know, falling apart on you. And there's nothing the Fed can do except sit back and watch. I think the rally towards the end of the week in the long bond saved all that chatter. And you can see the market responded very positively. All you need was a bond rally along with some good earnings in Apple, and you got a pretty good rally in the market.
Yeah. 10-year got down to 4.5% cash and 2-year to 4.8%.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. Like all these other commodities and everything else, all the risk off stuff doesn't make any difference. I think this is just, you know, you needed for the market to turn around last week, you needed a couple of decent earnings, especially in Apple. Yeah, you know, save the ship, and then you needed the bonds to bounce. And I thought the bond rally was the easiest bet. I think the Apple stuff was hard. I think Apple, you know, I think any of those earnings plays are hard.
It was the easiest risk reward bet, but that you know, last week that was scary as hell because that could have easily unraveled very quickly. Bitcoin up nearly 10% from the lows last week, from 57 and change to 63 and change, nearly 64.
Yeah. I got some monster rally. I bought some the other morning. I bought some last week, early in the week. I think I paid 57.5, like 57 something, 57.6.
Look at you. Look at you go.
I scoopied the bottom. And I got some ETH at like 28.80 or something. I don't remember exactly the price. I'm just going off the top of it. But I didn't get enough. I wanted to reload. I wanted it to be lower. I was hoping that it actually dropped into the low 50s, and it didn't.
I had an awesome conversation with Ryan Grace on last Thursday's Price of Truth. He came on for the second time and just dropped some knowledge all over the place. It was a sick conversation. Shout out to Ryan. Natty Gas up nearly 1.5%.
Yeah, if you get Ryan, the key to Ryan Grace is you have to take off the shackles. Like, you have to take off the handcuffs, the shackles. You got to let the kid just go. Like,
oh, yeah.
Ryan, when Ryan doesn't feel like he has to protect the franchise, he can just talk. He's great.
He's got a brilliant thought. We talked about marijuana, given the fact that there was the whole rescheduling. I don't know what you want to call it. Headline, or let's call it a political play, because that's exactly what it is. You run that political play going into an election and the midterms. So he gave some thoughts on that, gave some thoughts on the election, gave some thoughts on Bitcoin volatility. It was a terrific discussion. Anyways, so what do you do with what do you think you do with bonds going into this week? Was that little rally enough for you and I'm done?
I think they got more upside. But let me tell you, Vic, I worry about you. I don't think in Singapore you're even allowed to talk about cannabis and marijuana. I think if you talk about it, if there's somebody listening from the Singaporean like government, they're just going to come and get you. They know where you live, okay? They're going to come get you. You know, like you don't stand a chance, okay? You know, you're going to be, you know, if they string you up as a drug dealer, you're going down.
That's exactly what Ryan said. He goes, let's change the topic before they come get you.
Yeah, right. I think Singapore is I never forget getting off the airplane in Singapore and the sign in the airport, it said, if you bring drugs in, the penalty is death. Doesn't it say that?
Yes. Automatic death penalty. And it's not like, it's not a peaceful one either, Tom. They still do old school hanging on those offenses.
I know, but it's like, if you bring drugs into the country, the penalty is death. Like, they don't really shake it up at all. That's unbelievable.
Let me ask you this, because I've never really talked to you about marijuana stocks in a long time, and because it was a little bit of a play last week, until it wasn't. It seems to me this is the ultimate rug pull, because 70-80% of American public says, yeah, why is this thing illegal? You should just legalize it. It seems like we're in dire straits for additional tax revenue. And every midterm or election year, a couple of months into the election, we get the, hey, we're going to legalize this thing, or hey, we're going to reschedule this thing. And it feels like a pure political play, which in my opinion is why this thing always gets faded sooner and sooner after the news. What do you think? Would you ever trust these headlines, or would you just wait until it actually comes? Because it seems like the ultimate political play.
I trust price, not headlines. And there is no play. I don't think there's a play in cannabis. And I'm gonna tell you, I was on the road this weekend. I drove up to Michigan, and
you made that run for the good stuff across the border, huh?
No, I did not make a run for the good stuff across the border. But I will tell you that every single exit heading out of Illinois and Indiana into Michigan, every single exit, all it is cannabis stores. And it's like massive cannabis stores. And I'm like, who buys all this stuff? How do they compete? And when you look at these stocks, I mean, I don't even know how you play it. Like, there's nothing to really play.
Yeah, there's not a ton. And a lot of the stuff is still OTC because a lot of these places are unbanked. Ryan did a great job breaking it down actually on the podcast.
I'm actually surprised there's not a futures contract in you know, there's not a cannabis futures contract. There's not a, like a hemp contract. I mean, there may be a swap, but I don't think there's a publicly traded hemp contract.
Tom, let me tell you, if there was, I'd be wearing it. Okay. I'd be betting the future of the Jones family wealth.
I don't think you would. So I'm going to tell you a little story and then we can go on to Pete. So a few years ago, this kid right out of MIT, two kids right out of MIT, cold called me, came up to the office and said, hey, you know, we got your name from some so-and-so, you know, can we talk to you about a plan we have? They were grads, they had just graduated, they got their master's degrees from MIT, their undergraduates were from Oxford, smart kids. They came up to me and they said, hey, we have plans to build a cannabis exchange and we're gonna create the first cannabis exchange, legit futures exchange to trade cannabis. And we've designed a cannabis future, you know, basically it was a hemp future. I shouldn't say hemp future and all the things went around it. So they said, we're trying to raise money. You know, what do you think? And I'm like, well, you know, I invest in smart people. So I'm like, I told them, if you guys can raise a certain amount of money, then I'll put in some money. But if you can't, I'm not going to be the first guy in. And you can't use my name. Like, you got to go out and raise the money. And if you raise the money, then I'll be the last person in.
That's the old Silicon Valley due diligence. Nice, Tom.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. No, I was honest. I said, listen, I don't have time to, you know, and I don't think you guys know anything, but you're smart enough, you'll figure it out. And so they raised the money and I was an investor and they lasted for a couple of years, but they never were able to launch the product. Basically, the CFTC and the NFA essentially, you know, shut them down before they could, you know, before they could actually launch the product. So it never went anywhere. And it was a good try, but they never actually got the product off the ground. They tried. They built some cool software. They built some cool products, but it never went off the ground. That's what I'm saying. It's really hard, I guess, is my point.
Yeah, it's because of the current legal framework, which makes zero sense, Tom. Makes zero sense.
Hey, Vic, let's bring in Pete.
Let's do it.
Hey, Pete.
Well, how are you tonight?
We're good. How are you, Pete?
I'm doing good. So a bumpy is a beautiful day in Chicago. So a little chilly, but you did bring your golf clubs home with you though, right? You didn't just...
Well, they're in the back of my car and I'm deciding whether to dump them in the dumpster tomorrow or not. They're in the back of my car. I probably have some stuff in my golf bag that I probably need, but no, I don't, you know, I don't really need my clubs anymore.
There you go. Yeah, it was a beautiful day actually.
It got to be a nice day. It wasn't very nice early on. It was kind of cold.
It was cold. Yeah.
Yeah. It was cold and rainy and it turned out to be a beautiful day.
Yeah.
So Pete, I'm not going to cover a lot of commodities tonight. Let's just talk about
I agree with you, Tom. I think the focus is on yields, interesting move in yields. I got to hand it to the Fed for dancing around. You know, we got to a 5% 2-year right before the Fed announcement, and they were able to dance enough around that without getting specific on cutting back the number of cuts that they've modeled in, as well as the idea of, is there a hike coming? I think we got down to 32 basis points of cuts before the meeting. We went up to 45 and we're right around 40 basis points of cuts throughout the year. So they kind of managed expectations pretty well. And what really worked was I was long 2 years and they bounced, but what bounced was the tens you bought and more so the belly of the curve was an interesting place. It was the best place to be. So I think it's going to be telling if post-non-farm, we hold on to this 115 and a half, 115 level and in the 30s. I've got to think maybe equities have a little bit more room to run here. To the upside.
Well, I think everybody is kind of thinking that. But I will say the one only thing I want to say about the bonds is that last week was, you're right, they were whippy and they were really thin. And I still think they have, you know, like I said, they have a 5-point expected move by July. So five handle move. So I think that they have, you know, I think there's a good risk reward in there still. But that said, I don't think the Fed did anything but manage expectations, which is exactly what they're supposed to. Like the reason Jay Powell is good at his job is because he just manages price. And I'm so sick of Fed governors telling us what they think, because they don't know jack about anything.
Right.
And their opinions have no value to me. But somebody that can manage what the market is telling us is exactly what a Fed chair or a Fed governor, whoever makes the decisions, is exactly what they should do. Just manage the expectations, calm the markets around what the markets are actually doing.
Right.
When the bonds go down, say, hey, you know what? Yeah, we're, you know, us lowering is off the table for now because bonds are lower. And when the bonds rally back up, hey, it's back on the table because, you know, the bonds rally back up. I mean, give the credit to, you know, give the credit to a free market.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if, and this goes back to a bigger discussion, Vic, like do our politicians and does the consumer really recognize that, you know, like the whole world, you know, needs to know that the reason people come here is for the depth of liquidity and because our market works. Like, you can't go and dump $1 billion or $1 trillion into a marketplace that's illiquid, that's not, doesn't work. But if you just protect the integrity of the market, then the Fed chair and the Fed governments, their job is really easy. Just manage consumer expectations around price.
I agree with that. For the most part, I agree with that. I'd say 90 to 95% of the time, that's
pretty good for you.
I would say there are times, which over the last couple of years, where the Federal Reserve is saying things that the market does not agree with, and the market has to go find the Federal Reserve. I don't think it happens often, and I think it creates vol. But I think most of the time, the Federal Reserve is probably finding price. There are times, though, where they have to take a position, right or wrong, and it creates volatility, right or wrong. But I would agree.
Yeah.
So how does? Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this flows back. Monday. Monday's a bank holiday in London, so usually we see a little less flow come through everything when the UK's out. So, but as we get into Tuesday and Wednesday, it'll be interesting to see if we can hold above 18,000 in NASDAQ. I think that really puts the shorts to the test a little bit as to whether or not we're going to, you know, was a rally to sell or not. And I think we got a mixed bag of earnings coming out this week, everything from Uber to Disney. Palantir, a couple of other things.
Oh, yeah, they're all mid-tier players.
Well, that's it. It's nothing. You got nothing.
You
chunky.
Finally have. That was my whole point.
You're going to have your Reddit has earnings this week. Are you going to go on your world tour, Tom? Your Reddit world tour this week?
I am not, but I am long Reddit. And I mean, I haven't traded it. I'm just long it. You know. I bought stock a couple of years ago and privately, and then I'm just holding it until I can someday sell it. I'm not allowed to sell it. So who knows?
Do you have any inside information you'd like to share with us?
I have absolutely nothing. I have nothing. I'm crossing my fingers and hoping the stock goes higher. I have absolutely nothing. I can't even hedge it. So I don't even do anything. So nothing.
What did you think about crude oil's move last week? A lot of
it didn't surprise me at all. I think crude oil is, was grossly overpriced, and I think, you know, I've thought all along crude oil is going into the 60s. Yeah. So, well, it's only in the high 70s, right? So,
what does that mean for Tesla? That means a Tesla is like a $40 stock, then.
Why?
Because what the hell would you want an electric car for if oil's in the 60s?
Listen, people that own electric cars don't even know what the price of gas is
anymore. Right. It is crazy. Absolutely amazing how quickly that goes out the door. You have no idea whatsoever.
I haven't bought gas in like a year. I don't even know what gas is now at the pump. I don't even look. Like, as soon as you get a Tesla, you forget. Or any kind of electric car, you don't even care about gas prices. It's like somebody else's problem.
Okay. Just wait until all of the until all of these policies go in place. Wait until you can't, it's illegal to buy an ICE vehicle in the state of California. Wait until all these emissions policies go into place and everyone's got to plug in. Wait till you can't have a gas stove, Thomas. Wait till all of our money is digital. Then what do you think the price of your electricity is going to be relative to the price of oil?
Hey,
what do you think's going to happen? You're going to be begging for nuclear energy then.
Hey, I've been listening to this since the mid-70s, okay? The sky has been falling since the mid-70s, all right? I'm tired of the sky is falling. Let's talk about the other thing, like glass half full, all right? Let's not talk about the sky is falling, okay?
I know,
I can't stand the glass half empty, you know?
In your world, Thomas, I'm sure the glass is it's not even half full. It's overflowing, my friend. But that's not necessarily representative of the other 50% of the population in the United States.
I'm just saying, I'm not a sky is falling guy.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But the point is, a lot of electric car companies are reporting this week. I think Nikola, Fisker, a handful.
Rivian. Right. Yeah.
Those companies are out of business.
Yeah.
Thank you, Federal Reserve.
I mean, Rivian will survive because.
Will it at $8?
Yes, because Illinois is a state that works.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
There you go.
Oh my God.
I just wanted to set Victor off, but Pritzker is going to make sure that Rivian survives.
Yeah, I think he just helped them fund a second plant of some sort. So,
yeah, no, Rivian, you know, yeah. I've never been in a Rivian, so I can't say, but I know a couple people have it that say it's not bad.
Yeah. It looks like a beautiful car, but
They say it's not bad.
Nice moves in the yen. Some of the big, it seems, Bank of Japan intervened allegedly.
It was a nice move. You know, it really was a nice move in the end, but it didn't, if you were long yen, you're not even.
No, absolutely. Not yet, but you know what? The one thing that's nice is, and this will be interesting to play out, both times they intervened, and the second one, they intervened right at 4 o'clock in the afternoon is when probably the thinnest hour, 4 to 5 is the thinnest hour in the world to trade FX. Most of the U.S. is out. Very few people from Asia are in. You've got the Kiwis basically kind of quoting product, and that's it. And they went in, and I think they took the market up 150 points. In classic intervention fashion, once they're done, they hang up the phone. Market gets sold, you know, half that rally back off. But it put it all back in the next day. And what was interesting is some of the – what you saw was the yen rally, and some of the, you know – Euro yen got to, I think, 35-year extremes. Sterling yen was at all-time extremes, I believe.
There's no pot odds, Pete, in shorting yen here. That's why, because after that rally, which is probably like a huge long-term bottom in place. After that, there's no risk reward. What do you stand to make? You know, make a couple hundred ticks back, and you're going to lose points. It doesn't make any sense.
The way the market held on to, at least it's holding on to it right now, held on to those, usually those intervention rallies are always sold into and they test the lows at some point. Yeah. It seems like there is a little bit of traction between, maybe there is some two-way risk coming back into this market a little bit. And I think you're seeing that play through yen, playing through the crosses. And I think that's also giving, again, rally gives a little bit of footing to equities too. So I think if we see the yen hold in here, it gives equities a little bit more room to the upside. So I wouldn't be surprised to see some of the things that have outperformed last week continue to hold some ground and rally.
Pete, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for tonight.
You bet, guys. Talk to you later.
Vic, you ready for a little taste of Russia?
Hello. Let's do it.
Hey, we're covering all the bases. We're covering Pete Molmat from the Midwest, a little Ilya from the San Francisco area, and Victor Jones from Singapore, and we got everybody in here tonight. We got the whole world covered. So, hey, Ilya, where is Ilya? Is he on?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Sorry, I didn't see you. All right, we've been having a fun conversation tonight, Ilya, about what we're kind of looking at. We didn't touch on one market, which I think is kind of interesting after last week. There was a huge rally back in some of these chip stocks.
Mm-hmm.
And Vic mentioned it briefly, like in the tech stocks. Mm-hmm. But specifically, like NVIDIA, you know, went crazy last week.
Yeah.
After, like the week before, it had a sell-off down in, you know, like down 80 or 70 or 80 bucks one day. And then it's like, it's picked up 100 points. SMCI, I mean, all of them have AMD finally, like, looks like it bottomed.
Mm-hmm.
You give this any chance? Like, I think it's going to be, I think it's a head fake, but I don't know what.
Yeah, I think it's going to end in tears. All of these names to me look like NASDAQ on steroids. They're just overstated versions of what NQ is showing you. Just less liquidity, more volatility. If it's risk on, that risk goes there first because everybody wants to relive the glory of the fourth quarter, first quarter rally where these names were leading the big upswell. And I think at this point, when it gets risk on, that's what's bought. And when it gets risk off, that's what's sold. Because everybody's sort of just the risk on vehicle for people is that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't disagree. I don't think it's going to end in tears. I think tears is, I think if you were.
Well, not long-term tears. Like, yeah. Like obviously all of these have great long-term stories. AI cannabis, isn't going anywhere.
Cannabis ended in tears. Okay.
NVIDIA, I wouldn't even say it's ended. It's just my cannabis strategy is like a 30-year plan.
Okay. Like
anytime
well,
they
nobody get, else has a 30-year plan, but
yeah, like
cannabis.
I just buy a little periodically.
Some of the EV stocks, all that stuff ended in tears. So far, the chip stocks, all they've ended in is a couple of people are, damn, why didn't I sell? Like, that's not tears. That's just like, you know.
Not yet. Well, no. I do think there's a lot of speculative froth in them as there is in the broader kind of space and NASDAQ in general. And so at some point, there's going to be a conversation saying, look, the market is pricing the great and glorious AI future tomorrow. It's not that it's not coming. It's just not coming tomorrow. And so let's kind of distribute this back down a little and get to valuations that make sense in terms of what's the feasibility of scaling it, what's the feasibility of actually getting the great and wonderful AI utopia built and engaged with over a 5-10 year period.
So I have an AI question.
Sure.
This out to both you guys, because we've been struggling with this. The reason in my crazy mind, the reason AI it is so popular, it's still the top dog is because everybody wants to somehow integrate AI into their companies for what they think may be a lot of reasons. It's going to make X easier. It's going to make support easier. It's going to make research easier. It's going to make customer this and that. It's going to make learning. It's going to make everything better. Okay. I haven't found in our world, I haven't found a single company that's been able to, quote, monetize this to date, like, which is kind of crazy because everybody, this is all they talk about. But monetizing this so that it actually has some real quantitative value, like, we haven't figured it out. I don't know any firm in finance that's figured it out. And I don't know any firm anywhere that's figured it out yet. Like, it's going to make coding easier. Well, nobody's figured that out yet. It's going to make learning easier. I don't think that people have figured it out. And I'm talking about with, like, training your bots on your internal content. We still haven't figured it out. I'm not talking about like a general broad-based bot, like, you know, ChatGPT or something like that. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about, like, for example, a Tasty bot. And I'm talking about, like, you know, for any other company, you know, like an IBM bot, whatever they want to do. Just, I haven't figured it out. Like, you know, how any of these companies are going to monetize it in some that they can give quantitative results that they can prove, hey, this makes it like, right. I get why the whole industry is exploding because everybody's talking about it. Everybody thinks there's something there, but I haven't seen anybody yet put it into practice other than.
I completely agree with all of that. So just in terms of the kind of things that I would apply it to in my own work, it is easier for me to just do stuff myself at this point than it is to go, hey, LLM model, spit me out three good YouTube video titles or give me a summary of XYZ article. It's faster for me at this point to do it myself. And the results are better. I get to the end faster. And I think that that kind of captures the most things for now, which is why I think it's a little overdone here. I think it's the promise of eventually getting these things done, but it's not happening tomorrow or probably the day after.
All right, Vic, what do you think about that? The same thing. Like, I mean, what's your take on this? Like, are these stocks way ahead of reality?
I think partly. I think in some ways, no, because CapEx happens first. And so if you look at NVIDIA, they have real revenue numbers.
No. Real, I understand. I know NVIDIA has numbers because they're the ones promoting this.
Let me work to your point. So in some ways, the answer is no, because there's real CapEx behind the moves. In other ways, that in the conversation or the narrative around AI, I would agree. There's anecdotal things in terms of like support, where you're seeing some fintech that are using chat bots really effectively to minimize their support expenses. There's things, marginal improvements I've read a lot about, you know, like developers themselves utilizing AI, which makes their deployments a lot easier, but not necessarily wholesale laying off of, you know, engineers. That may be happening, but I'm just might not be read into those things. So I would agree with you. I think it's happening at the margin. I think there are some areas at imminent risk, and I think CapEx is happening, but no, I personally am not read into truly transformative productivity increases and expense reduction happening right now. I agree with that.
So every company that I know of has committed a budget, ourselves included, to the development of AI, whether it's a team of, you know, 5-10 people, whether it's how much, you know, how much computing power. It's expensive. You know, it's expensive to turn AI on to, you know, your customers and let them go. It's not, none of this is cheap. And I haven't seen anybody yet figure out a way in fintech to monetize it. And I'm sure that goes for every other business as well. I mean, of course, you know, AMD and IBM and NVIDIA, you know, and SMCI, yeah, they're raking it, you know, they're living the dream right now. But, you know, the question is there something actually there? I don't know the answer to that.
I think there is long term. I just think we're early in the cycle, and everybody gets excited early in a cycle. Okay. Can I ask you guys what instruments or binary events, wherever you want to go, what are you looking forward to the most this week? I'll start. Palantir is reporting after Monday. This is one where I don't care what it does. If it gets cheaper, I buy more, because they have an algo on all of you that they're going to sell to governments. And if that doesn't work, then Geo is reporting on Tuesday in the morning. So if your algo, this is, they link together. If Palantir algo says you're a crazy person and you're a risk to the government, well, Geo is a private prison company and they'll throw you in prison. So Palantir and Geo are my 1-2 punch for Monday after the close. Geo in the morning, and those things go down, I buy more, because that's where we're headed. That utopian, dystopian world. That's what I'm looking forward to. Gentlemen, let's go to you. Ilya, what are you looking forward to this week?
Just for the record, I am the opposite of the dystopian theorist. I am,
I know you are.
I am the perpetual optimist. I think it's all going to be great eventually. I am of the Pinker school of the best time to live is right now. Yeah, it's right now. Exactly. I think he's right. But anyway, for me, there's a couple policy announcements this week. There's a little bit of data, but it's not a lot. For me, the most interesting thing is the price action now. because I thought the way that Friday ended was really interesting. Dollar spiked lower on NFP, then ran away. And the pound ran away completely. The euro ran away about halfway. The pound was the most striking. The Canadian dollar as well. Spiked lower hard, then ran away completely. That sort of echoed the way the bonds ran away. They ran away from their highs. Stocks, really interesting closes. NASDAQ didn't get back over 18,000. S&P couldn't get back over the figure and got stuck at the bottom of the range where it was consolidating before the breakdown. So neither of them could get back into that topping range. Both of them got stuck. So lots of markets had the thing they did on NFP, and then into the close, they kind of backed away from what would be a decisive break. Stocks did better. Dollar held up well, surprisingly. Bonds did somewhere in the middle. So I'm looking at this now very closely and going, why didn't they make the conviction move? And I'm going to be watching the price action here closely. I'm a little bit upside down, not surprisingly, on my SPY and Q put spreads. And it's getting a little bit worrying. And frankly, as I was telling you before when we were starting, I hate making excuses for losing positions. I'd rather cut them. But I don't think I'm prepared to cut them here because the price action is a little iffy. I think the bearish bias holds here for now. I also sold some oil. I bought a put spread on USO here.
Hmm. Interesting. So you're in the oil's going to 60 camp too with Tom?
I don't think 60. I'm not prepared to say all that. I do think that the gains in oil were built on fear of fear itself. There is no supply disruption from either of these wars. It's just not there. You can look at the price action. The spread between WTI and the Brent crude benchmark, it's pinned to $5. It's not going anywhere. If there was a supply disruption to Europe, that thing would blow out. No. So nothing is going on. I think maybe we're starting to round out some sort of a near-term thing in Gaza. It seems like both sides are getting to a point where we're going to wind this down some. That seems to be the squawking around it. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got to like the low 70s, let's call it, initially. Let's start there. Like right now, the spread I have is from 75 down to like 71.5. Let's get to 71.5. That'll be all right. I'll be in the money on my other leg then.
Close enough to me for me.
Tom, how are you going into the week? What are you excited about? Or what are you looking forward?
Well, I don't love this opening tonight, but I do think that you have to open up to go down. So I've said that many times on this Sunday night show, too many times. So I also think that
you also have to open up to go up.
True. they goosed them on the close on Friday. Surprisingly, they goosed the NASDAQ with a little kind of buyback. And I thought they goosed the S&Ps too, which means they closed them above, you know, water with a little too much juice. So there was, they were a little rich relative premium wise. So I think that there's going to be a hard rally to hold at least tomorrow. You know, if stocks are going, I don't think the earnings are, I don't think there's any external events this week, earnings, news, you know, any of that stuff that's going to help the market a lot. I think you had a lot of that last week. I don't think you have anything this week. So I think the seller is going to creep back in. I'm short, but I'm not massively short. I am long bonds. That's my little bit of my hedge. I am long bonds. I am short a lot of premium. I am, you know, like I said, I'm a little bit short crude oil. I'm a little bit long Japanese yen, those kind of things. But I'm mostly short premium here this week, and I'm also short delta. So short delta in the stock market, long delta in the bonds, and that's it. And I'm short some of the high flyers. Like I'm short NVIDIA here. I'm actually long AMD, but I'm short NVIDIA, and I think I got out of a lot of earnings stocks last week. So like Apple, I'm done with, you know, the stocks that earnings on Friday. What was the other main one on Friday morning? Coin. Like I sold out those positions or covered those positions. So I think our risk is way down this week, but I am short deltas. So, and I think if they open up higher tomorrow, you know, that may be the high for the next couple of days. We'll see. Mm. I mean, we're back, you know, NASDAQ's back at 18,000. So it's had a beautiful rally of whatever, almost 500 points, whatever it is. And the S&Ps have rallied up, you know, from trading in the 49 handle up to 51 and, you know, almost 52. We're getting there. You know, it's we've rallied back almost 5%.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you.
And all of them are sitting at the underside of the range that they were consolidating in before they
down. I'm
none of them have gone back into it. So
I agree. All right, Vic, you get the last word.
Well, it's a last question, really. We talked about the rally in Apple, but perhaps not necessarily about what underpinned some of it. So I want to end with this. I think I know what your take is, but just I want to give you a little bit of a toss up. So Apple announced an eye-watering $110 billion stock buyback. And usually when these types of things happen, this squawk comes back into like, you know, is that an effect? Should companies be allowed to buy their stock back? Should be passing on wage, you know, these earnings onto workers and or building businesses, blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to open up. Tom, what do you think about that $110 billion stock buyback? Or do you think people should leave the board and the CEOs alone and let them make the choice on what's the most efficient use of capital?
Well, that is what they get paid. First of all, that's a proposal that the CEO and the CFO take to the board, and it's an authorization. It's not a requirement. So basically it gets a little, people think that means they're going to buy $110 billion worth of stock. No, they received approval to buy $110 billion worth of stock. They might not use any of it. You know, I mean, history suggests that companies that buy their own stock back that have been in a little bit of, that have been heavy like Apple, when especially when they're losing market share. And you can look at IBM, you know, as an example, you know, it doesn't really do much. And so I don't think that's a reason to buy Apple here at all. In fact, if anything, I think it's a reason to sell Apple, but it's too early. They had the one rally on Friday, huge rally. I think got to give it another day or two. Maybe they goose it up towards 188 or 189, and then you can lean into Apple. I don't think it's got that much upside here. I do not like Apple at all. And I think any stock that rallies on the news of a buyback now is a sale, but buybacks in general, you know, like, I personally don't like buybacks because I would rather companies spend money on other things like buying other companies. But, you know, listen, I mean, how are you going to argue with Apple? They're a $3 trillion company. You know, it's something, right? I'm not going to sit there and go, oh man, fire Tim Cook because, you know, he's lost. he's on a 73 game losing streak. I mean, the guy, you know, he built a $3 billion company.
Well, guess what, Tom? You're on the same side, it seems. I don't want to say you're short, but Warren Buffett announced over the weekend that they had reduced their Apple position by 13%, I think, in the last quarter.
I did not know that.
You're a net seller, but he's lightening up as well. You're on the same side of the market.
Makes sense.
I mean, that makes sense. If you report earnings that are kind of not very exciting, and then you report a huge buyback intent, and the reason you rally is that, and if you hadn't said that, then people would have read your earnings more closely and been disappointed. How do you get happy about that? I mean, that seems like a flash in the pan kind of thing.
Ilya, I'd say you're a growth stock. You'd be spending capital on R&D. I'd be buying my stock back right now. I'd be needing to support my price if you and I were both stocks. You'd be a growth stock.
I mean, listen, I don't think there's anything like wrong with a buyback. I don't think there's anything inherently bad about it. But I don't see that as a reason to think that Apple should keep going higher or that it looks good in a perpetual kind of, in a trend defining way for the stock that you report kind of soggy earnings. And then you go, but wait, don't worry about that. We're going to buy a bunch of this stock back, and there's going to be a buyer out here. Here, front run us. You'll do well.
All right. Take us out, Tom.
All right, boys. Well, this was a really good show tonight. I enjoyed it. It was fun. Kept the pace moving. Have a great week, Vic. We'll see you Tuesday for on our show, and your show's every night this week, and Ilya, your show's every night this week. So we got a full house. Everybody's back this week. So looking forward to it. Boys, we'll see you tomorrow.
Peace.
Cheers.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc., and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be, trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing broker.